and the founder and CEO of Connections Media. And I'm delighted to turn the podium over to him, Jonah Seiger.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, and good afternoon. Before we get started here, I just want to give a special thanks to Julie and Ed and the entire staff here at IPTI and Politics Online for putting together a really great day today. If you all give them. There are a lot of familiar faces in the crowd. Many of you have been at these conferences going on now. This is the 14th one of these. And what I think is so special about IPTI and the Politics Online Conference is that it creates a place where all of us who practice politics and the internet, whether we're left or right, red or blue or purple or whatever other color, can come together, learn from each other, get to know each other across the lines, and advance the role of the internet in our nation's and our world's political process. And it's in that spirit that we are so honored to have Elliot here today to talk to us. All of us, in one way or another, use Google tools, whether it's search or AdWords, analytics, or whatnot. But as users of these products, myself included, it's often been the feeling that there hasn't really been a face to the company. It's a self-service kind of model. And so for those of us who practice in the political world, it's very important for us to work with companies that are doing internet stuff every day. And we're very honored today to have Elliot Schrag, the Vice President for Global Communications from Google, here to talk to us about Google's vision for the political internet and some of the stuff they have been doing and look forward to doing with this community. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Elliot to come up here and take it away. Thank you.
So if I'm the face of Google, then this needs to be the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm not the face of Google. In fact, I should say this was the second version of the chart. The first version of the title had me listed as Vice President of Global Communications of the Google Inc., but thankfully that got changed. Someone will explain it to you if you didn't get it, guys. I'm not going to talk about sort of Google's vision for this world that we live in, because I don't have a clue of what the vision is. We have some stuff we're doing. The reason I'm excited about being here is because we want to learn from you. You guys are the ones who are doing this day in, day out. You're the practitioners. You're the ones who really are at the cutting edge of using the technologies that my colleagues and I put together and that I help people understand. And you're using those tools in incredibly interesting ways, in ways no one's ever used them before, and in ways that have applications well beyond the political sphere. And that's part of the reason why we at Google were so excited about being a part of this event and are so excited about, you know, contributing and learning from you. I think we are doing a workshop tomorrow, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. I have a few major points that I want to make sure in terms of organizing the remarks that I'm going to make. You know, it will come as no surprise to this audience that the internet, there's a consensus now that the internet is revolutionizing politics and what happens after people are elected. And we at Google are committed to not only foster the change, but we want to be a partner to all of you. And that's really, you know, we talk a lot at Google about being partners. We're partners with our users. Our users shape our products. The people who are our sponsors and provide content are our partners. And again, we want to be partner with you. I'm going to talk about three things today. First, to learn, as I say, about what you're doing, to see the way you're putting our tools to work, and also to see how we can make your campaigns more successful. I don't mean so that you all win your campaigns, but more successful in getting the messages out that you want to get out and reaching the audiences you want to reach and making sure that you're able to accomplish, you know, the messages and get the best use out of the tools that we put together. And then I want to talk seriously for a few minutes about where we all take these tools and go with them. And that's the good, the bad, and the unknown of online politics. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about what we at Google are planning for the... It's a BlackBerry. It's not my BlackBerry. At least unless my BlackBerry over there is going to have feedback. And see when we talk about what we're doing and see how we at Google can help do a better job. So first, learning from you guys. You all know about the impact that the internet's had. You know, macaca is a word that's now entered the vocabulary in a way that it never had. And in many ways, that video has taken the place of the Mike Dukakis in the tank video, for those of you old enough to remember it, or become the new Dean Scream video for those of you who must be old enough to remember that. More and more candidates are announcing their campaigns online. You know, as pioneers of online politics, you guys are showing the innovative ways to use our tools and services. Last year was light years ahead of 2004. 2008 is going to be light years away from 2006 and go a long way to make the internet, you know, the ground zero, the epicenter of online politics. So how are we going to do that, or how has it happened? In 2006, campaigns spent $40 million on campaigns online. It's small, of course, in comparison to the $2 billion overall, but it's expected to double, at least to double, in 2008. Indeed, already, candidates and campaigns are spending tens of thousands of dollars on, you know, on AdWords campaigns alone on our network, and probably thousands more on others. So it's clear that the trend exists. It's clear that it's growing. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What are the changes or challenges? And again, I'm going to ask some questions that I hope you all will react to, and maybe in the questions afterwards or in the workshop that you all will have with us tomorrow, we can sort of explore some of these together. I'm going to mention a bunch of challenges. First, how do we, all of us, provide trusted third-party information while at the same time making it easier to access official candidate information? At Google, we're a content-neutral company. Our goal is to respect freedom of expression, but we're also hopeful that our tools can improve the political process. Most of you, I think, are aware of our You Choose campaign offered on YouTube. That's something we announced earlier this month. It gives candidates a chance to talk to voters directly without the media filter. That doesn't mean, however, much of the disappointment of some of the candidates or campaigns, that we're not going to provide a platform for alternative points of view. Parodies can also be as informative and perhaps even more entertaining than the official videos. And as a content-neutral company, we're committed to making those available as well. Second challenge, how do we, all of us, help promote political participation without expressing preferences? At Google, we view this as an issue of sort of corporate social responsibility. Our mission is inherently political. Google's mission is to make information universally available and useful. That's a political mission. Knowledge is power. New technologies, the kinds that we're putting out, redefines what political participation means. It removes participation from the elite control over everything that happens before voting actually begins. We talk a lot about how our mission is about democratizing information. But when you talk about the political process, our technology and what we're doing with you is democratizing the political dialogue. It democratizes that dialogue before voting actually begins. It used to be that democracy was more limited, that the person without money or access could only really be heard on election day. Well, as all of you know in practice, that's not the case anymore. People have access to a universal audience to get their points of view across very, very quickly. Now, of course, that raises a couple of other questions. So third, how do we provide a platform for free expression without exacerbating the ugliness? We face this challenge at Google every day, way beyond politics. But it's also cropping up in the political arena. Some of you may be aware of a particularly ugly video involving images of John and Elizabeth Edwards' late son. While the instinct is to take, you know, that's horrible, take it down, we ultimately decided that we couldn't. These are really hard questions and challenges, and I think there are going to be more of them over time, not fewer. Then the last challenge, the fourth one I'd identify, is how do we give voters the information they need without overwhelming them and thus alienating them? I defy anyone here to search Hillary Clinton 2008 and read all the results without passing out. Not because of the content, mind you, because of the volume. There's just so much information out there. And we need to find ways to give voters what they want, what they need, without overwhelming them. So those are the challenges. I want to take a minute and before I go to the good and the bad to show you the present, what's out there. You know, come on, it's technology. I got to have some product demo. So this is from, hopefully from YouTube.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and bright. And I pity any girl who's a me tonight.
Somebody has a video up there now of you fixing your hair for 2 minutes plus.
But they're entitled to do that. What's wrong with that? I mean, I don't... Listen, I'm running for president of the United States, and it goes with the territory.
That video, do you think the political content on sites like YouTube is good for democracy, bad for democracy, or mixed?
Very good for democracy.
Why?
Because we believe in a country where everyone can express their opinion. There shouldn't be, with very rare exceptions, shouldn't be any limit on people's ability to express those opinions.
What is it about this YouTube video from 1994 showing you as a flip-flopper? What's that
well,
about?
Well, I just got to look at the excerpts from my debate. I was wrong on some issues back then. I'm not embarrassed to admit that. I think most of us learn with experience. I know I certainly have. I, if you want to know where I stand, by the way, you don't have to just listen to my words. You can go to look at my record as governor.
Our democracy is not for sale.
What we pay people in Washington for is to make decisions.
Hello, friends. I am Monty. I would like to announce my candidacy for President of these United States.
Here are some things you might not know about Billy. He's got small hands. In the last year, he was given a timeout on 4 separate occasions. He can't read. During his tenure as milk monitor, the price for chocolate milk reached all-time highs. His parents are divorced. And here's the last assignment Billy turned in. Does this look like the work of a leader? On this November 7th, when you receive your ballot, ignore Billy and put your gold star next to Jimmy Jones, your next preschool president. Jimmy Jones, he colors inside the lines.
Oh, you missed the tagline. Jimmy Jones, he works inside the lines. I'm not going to make any characterization of what's the good and the bad with respect to any of those in particular, but I want to talk now about how powerful these tools are. Again, this is from YouTube, just one example of the kind of tools. So obviously, the first and most, you know, most apparent, you know, benefit is transparency, you know, which voters, or you here in the room, might call authenticity. You see people, candidates, as they really are. It gives voters a new and better way to see inside campaigns and candidates. And it gives candidates a new way to explain themselves and demonstrate their commitment to openness. Another benefit is accountability. Voters have more ways to educate themselves and participate. Candidates are held to their history, to their statements, and to their actions. Some of you may recall in earlier campaigns, I think in 2000, the state of the art was CNN doing these sort of ad check segments, you know, for selected commercials. Well, now it happens in real time, and people can really trace back on digital images and documents what candidates have done. Fundraising. Clearly, the internet gives voters a bigger voice, and it gives candidates a much, much more diverse and broad fundraising base. Access. Another really important benefit. Makes it easier for voters to join the electoral process, you know, in meetups, by Facebook, MySpace, Orkut. Makes it easier for candidates to find new supporters and micro-target longtime voters. Now, of course, one other thing, it has spawned all of your companies and given all of you a very effective way to what we call monetize your passion. I think that's a pretty good thing. Of course, all of this adds up to what we might call a founding father's point. All of us together have a chance to shift the power base of American electoral politics, us through our technology, you through the ways you apply it, in order to broaden it, to raise the dialogue, to put a modern spin on the idea of government of the people, for the people, by the people. You know, it really does change the way those words, you know, change the meaning of those words in our political process. So that's the good, and let's be clear, the good is pretty darn good. But there are also some bad aspects, and aspects that really need to be a cause for concern. We should be honest and acknowledge those dangers that the new technology presents to this political process. Now, I'm not the best qualified. Indeed, I may be the least qualified person here to tell you all about this. But let me give it a shot and offer some. And again, these are questions or issues I hope we can talk about or raise with us in the workshop or in other of the sessions that are here at the conference. We talked about transparency. But the downside of transparency is turning the internet into a tabloid and destroying people's trust. We are redefining boundaries when it comes to the personal lives of candidates and their families. We all have to be more vigilant about protecting the truth. In just a few years, the internet has witnessed more drive-by character assassinations than any other media in history. The downside of accountability is giving you guys too much power. The power that you hold to blog off of a rumor or promote extremist positions means that you all could become the traditional media whose destructive influence and dominance you criticize every day. So one example, the rumor that Senator Obama attended a madras in Indonesia gained widespread currency and much broader attention after it spread like wildfire on the net. Manipulation of information is another example. Google bombing, the attempt to manipulate our rankings artificially, is another illustration of giving people who understand the technology and its impact way more power than really is appropriate or they merit. The downside of access is intrusion. In much the same way that Google faces daily charges, I know this all too well, daily charges that we know everything about everyone, and we do, campaigns are going to have to govern their reach. You can just imagine the snippet from that video getting circulated. Oh, my gosh. You think people don't like getting calls from pollsters over dinner? At least they can hang up. Getting rid of spam requires work. And while I haven't seen it yet, I have no doubt that there will be reports of political spyware in the upcoming elections. So what's the unknown? The unknown is really, it's up to all of us to sort of figure out, and again, for you guys to work on. That's why I'm here. That's why my colleagues are here. But we have some thoughts. Imagine, we spent a lot of time at Google, apart from the food, thinking of all sorts of sort of interesting ideas. So imagine mobile yard signs on your Motorola, data mining for people canvassing, that gives the latest information on the activities in connection with a campaign of a particular household that a canvasser is visiting. Micro-targeting. You guys tell me, I don't know, there are lawyers in the room. Is text messaging legal within 25 feet of a polling place? I don't know. I'm not joking. That's a question. I think we're going to have to figure it out. The new 527s. If individual networks political supporters for a candidate buy AdWords or advertising on behalf of a candidate, are they subject to FEC restrictions? Are they affiliated or not? Tracking political opposition by GPS. Will the next election find, or next campaign, this campaign, discover political gawker sites where people track candidates so that they can heckle them? Should I not be suggesting this? There's an awful lot going on, and we're not sure where it's going to go. I do know what we're going to do at Google for this campaign, and some of you are already familiar with some of the stuff, and I'd like to just highlight that and maybe mention a couple of other new things. Certainly in 2008, in these campaigns, our tools will continue to be used by candidates, reporters, issue groups, and the general public, all parties, nonpartisan. And of course, we're going to continue to work to make sure that we maximize the opportunities for access to information and to be accessible to you, because you guys are creating information and trying to get messages out. First, of course, many of you are already taking advantage of our new You Choose presidential candidate channels, which were announced just a couple of weeks ago. These channels give complete, unfiltered access to voters. Second, we've reached out to all of the candidates and invited them to come to Google to talk technology and policy and maybe even grab lunch. And we're going to put those videos up, if we can and the candidates permit us, on our websites as well. Third, we're expanding our product customization for products like Google Earth mashups on candidates, on their districts, and on voting information. This is one of the things I hope people will come and discuss at the workshop that we're hosting tomorrow morning. Fourth, and this I think will come as good news to many of you, we're going to help make our services easier to use for your community. Things like AdWords, Blogger, Analytics, and Earth. I'm pleased to announce that we've decided and we're going to put together a special Google sales and policy team dedicated to helping political campaigns. So from now on, for as just a small start, if you have a question, you can send it to elections@google.com. And we'll try, again, depending upon the volume, to direct you to where at the organization can best address the specific question or inquiry you have. We're also going to have real people who will answer real phones. How all this works out, really, though, depends largely on you. Our tools are as powerful as you make them. We recognize that, and that's why we want to work with you and with this community. Our commitment is to ensure that you know how to reach us and talk to us about how your candidate or issue, your campaign, can harness our tools and allow you to better connect with your constituents. Thank you very much. I think we have time for a few questions, and you don't. I think if you want, just stand. I know you're just awed by the brilliance of the presentation. If you have any questions, stand up, holler it out, and if not, you can all go have a break a lot sooner. Sure.
It's a challenging issue because at one point you allow so much to go through that has no credibility and becomes a farce. And the character assassination, particularly of candidates, it may not be the end of the system. This is too huge. It will continue. But it works to the detriment of the political system in the country. And that's my concern. How do you allow the freedom, the creativity? Satire is part of the political system, but the character assassination, the misinformation, I was appalled in the 2006 elections. I have to say the Republican did a better job in all sorts of misinformations and mischaracterizations of the other candidates, and I think that really works to the detriment of the system. Do you have any more thoughts about that?
You know, again, we're in an awkward position because the one thing I'll say categorically is we're not in the business of assessing truth or falsity. That's a path that we don't want to take and we don't think is appropriate or our users expect. You know, so that's sort of the Google response. Sort of more personally, I'm frankly at some level a little less concerned than you know, alarm, you know, than dramatically concerns, because at some level I suspect that these things are self-policing. And I think that each election is changing because of the self-policing aspects. And when self-policing, I mean that, you know, information that the cycle of correcting or identifying misinformation, I think is getting smaller. I think the technologies are becoming sufficiently robust and the acceptance of the technologies are becoming sufficiently widespread that two things happen. One is that, you know, inaccurate or misinformation can get highlighted more quickly, number one. And number two is egregiously inaccurate information or falsehoods, I think, risk creating a backlash. And that's sort of the self-policing aspect. That if it creates a sufficiently strong backlash, the result is exactly the opposite of the one that's intended. But again, I have to say that's me speaking as a citizen. Not, you know, it's not like where we have a backlash meter or anything like that. You know, but it is. It's a huge issue, and again, there's a huge question of responsibility on the part of all of you, just like for us, on what are the limits. Because clearly there are limits, and we have terms of service, and there are legal restrictions, et cetera. And of course, we expect the people who provide information to us that we make available to comply with the terms of service, and we, of course, comply with the laws so that if something is defamatory or libelous, and we're told that by a court, we take it down.
Personal Democracy Forum. So you'll enjoy this because I used Google to look it up. What you just said about Google not checking the truth of things, so I want to check the truth of something that Eric Schmidt said, the CEO of Google, a couple of months ago giving a speech in England. He had some really interesting predictions. He said in 5 years, truth predictor software would hold politicians to account. Voters would be able to check the probability that apparently factual statements by politicians were actually correct using programs that automatically compared claims with historic data.
It is true that he said that.
Yes. Is it true that Google is working on that?
So that's a wonderful question. The honest answer to that, and this lets me talk a tiny bit about Google, is I don't know. Because the way Google is structured is we have thousands of engineers. Again, some of you may be familiar with this. And the way the engineers work is that we have a 70-20-10, and 80% of their time, so 70-10, is devoted to projects that we assign them to. On advertising or on video or audio. But all of the engineers, indeed everyone at Google, has what's called 20% time, and they can work on whatever the heck they want. So whenever I get asked a question, is Google working on X? The honest answer is, I don't know, because I have no doubt that there is some engineer or some group of engineers that are doing the craziest, wackiest things that may well result in a story in a major newspaper saying, Google working on X. So is it possible that there are engineers working at Google doing statistical analyses of statements and trying to develop something like a truth predictor? Absolutely possible. But I think the statement I made is that we're not in that business, and I'm positive to say that today we're not in that business. There's a question in the back.
We have probably about, at any given time, 20 or so clients currently running AdWords campaigns. And one of the issues that sort of came up a lot last year were around the issue of click fraud, and especially in the content targeting. We probably had 4 or 5 clients call with very upset and very angry about, you know, the click fraud that was going on that we observed too. And of course we can call Google and to some extent they won't charge us for the click fraud that we know about, that we find, but there's probably a lot more that we are unaware of. And I see a lot of research and a lot of reports that try to predict how much click fraud is actually taking place, but I'm curious to know what percentage of clicks you think are fraudulent and what Google is doing to prevent fraudulent use of its service.
Okay, so again, a great question. We take click fraud very seriously. We've said actually a lot publicly recently about some of the steps we're doing and some of the estimates of the impact on click fraud. The reason we don't, and I'm not going to give, we don't generally, and I'm not going to give any specific percentage, is because it depends when you start measuring stuff and how you measure it. The vast majority of click fraud never gets billed to an account because we block it and identify it before the billing process even begins. So there's a question about whether that's click fraud or not. I think we are reasonably responsive when these inquiries come, and if you have concerns, I encourage you to express your concerns, and I think you'll find that we're pretty responsive. The percentage, again, I have to say candidly that I think the public estimates, published estimates by third parties, are wildly inaccurate. And the problem is that there are sort of perverse incentives in the process, because as you may well know, indeed, your clients or you may have engaged the services of these firms. There are firms that are out there that say click fraud is rampant and it's affecting your business. Hire us and we will get you, you know, your money refunded. And then oftentimes they're hired and they don't get much money back, but it's a great marketing strategy. So I'm much, you know, I think the message, again, it's a good example of the message not being consistent. I would also say, as has been said before, that at some level it is self-correcting, and we have a powerful incentive to make sure that click fraud doesn't exist, because if clicks are fraudulent, it means you're not getting and your clients aren't getting the return on the investment they made in the AdWords in the first place. And so that will create a disincentive for them to continue using our products or advertising with us. We're very aware of that, and that gives us powerful reasons to make sure that the clicks that you get or your clients get are accurate and valid clicks. I have ceded power to the man with the microphone. See, it's an old media kind of thing.
One of the things that I think people love about Google and that I've always admired is the don't be evil thing, how viral you guys have worked it on the internet, and there's a social conscience going on with you guys. So I sort of had this sort of like the Shoeless Joe Jackson say it ain't so thing with China last year, as did many people. And I kept saying to people, no, what they're doing is they're going into China, and they're going to get the Chinese people so addicted to it, then they're going to pull out until the Chinese government changes certain things or something. But I know there's a rationale behind that. I wouldn't think that you guys are just in it for the market, I would hope. So what do you think is going to benefit from a human rights standpoint with an interaction with China the way that you have it now?
Sure. Gosh. So I am the man who was the human pinata before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. I should say, again, we didn't talk about my background. My background actually is not in politics or campaigning, but rather is actually in the human rights field. So I've spent a lot of time working on human rights issues around the world and in China in particular. And I felt very strongly that we made the right decision with China. I'm not going to go on too long about this, but I'll say a couple of things. We actually did make a very thoughtful analysis in deciding how to proceed. And I would refer you to, you know, to the remarks that we made, and indeed even to the testimony I gave, because it was the result of a long and serious debate inside the company. It was not something that was done casually. And the decision ultimately came down to, are we able to be more helpful in contributing to the development of free information, open information, communities in China by offering services in China or by not doing so? And it was not an obvious answer. And I would have to say, in all honesty, that it has been very difficult since we've been there. Of course, being there doesn't mean that we always have to be there. But we believe that our presence today, even more frankly than at the time we decided, is contributing to improvements in China, to more information being made available to more people, and more people having the opportunity to find out what's going on in China and outside it than would exist beforehand. Will that always be the case? Don't know. But I think the one thing that I would just ask all of you, and again, this goes back to the, you know, don't be evil, is it was not a commercial decision purely. Certainly it's an important market. Certainly it's not a particularly important market today in terms of its impact. But it was a thoughtful process, and it's not a process that's over. It's a process that we continue to evaluate. You know, and you know, stay tuned. And we may have to stay tuned for a while. That's where we are.
Just out of curiosity, sure. The Dalai Lama had any response to you guys? I just out of curiosity.
Honestly, again, and this is part of the culture of Google, I haven't had any contact with the Dalai Lama. We got a lot of engineers at Google who are doing all sorts of funky things in their 20% time. I don't know who else has been in touch with the Dalai Lama.
What do you do with your 20%?
What do I do with my 20% time? That's a great question. You know, My 20% time actually is really focused on this issue of Google as a socially responsible company. You know, we do a tremendous amount of really cool and really interesting and really worthwhile things that are related to our mission, our information mission. But it's not very well organized. And frankly, people don't know about it as much, but we don't get as many of the right people involved. And because of the nature of the way we work, a lot of people who are able and helpful in the company aren't connected to a lot of the projects that we're working on. So my 20% time is really trying to make those connections. Candidly, it does inform the other 80% of my time, so I can answer questions like, what the hell are you working on? And so but that's how I spend the bulk of my sort of 20%.
Is $1 billion just not a lot to Google, or do you think you have better lawyers, or is the court just the way we're going to settle this because it's an issue that's going to haunt us until somebody does?
Who was it who said that litigation is just war by another means or negotiation by another means? You know, look, it will come as no surprise to anybody in the United States that people file lawsuits in order to get attention. And people file lawsuits in order to change the dynamic of business negotiations. You know, I think, to be fair, there are a lot of very interesting legal issues involved associated with what, you know, copyright means in an online or digital environment and interpreting some of the aspects of the DMCA. But I feel very confident in our positions, and frankly, more importantly, our lawyers do. Nobody started writing any checks yet. One more question?
On the copyright issue, YouTube, under the terms of use, restricts the use of YouTube clips. As we see in political campaigns, every candidate will be followed and taped. Are you all going to pursue the restriction on not using that material? Or are we going to have free reign? For example, it popping up in TV commercials or other uses.
Well, again, I don't want to pawn off the honest answer is it's a great and very precise question, and I encourage you to raise it at the workshop. The broader non sort of technical or non punt answer is it really depends on the circumstance, and my sense is it depends on who the rights holder is, and there may be very easy ways for people who want to put up ads and other things to go to the rights owner to get the rights, and that I suspect would be consistent with the terms of service. That doesn't answer your specific question. I encourage you to go to the workshop tomorrow to raise that one. I think we're out of time. Is that right? Thank you all very much. I'm going to stay around for a while if people want to follow up. Thank you.